Okay, welcome to Human Resource Management, and this is our lecture on training and development and career planning. And so you should have your slides there up on Canvas as we go through this. And so just looking at the objectives, some of the things that we're wanting to achieve, understand the importance of human resource management development to organisational success, so that linkage there. What does it actually mean, human resource development? Having a systematic approach to training and development, distinguishing between training and development, and outline major human resource development methods and techniques, and describe some key characteristics of an effective orientation program, which I've already done in a previous lecture, so please have a look at the recording that's called Induction. And some principles that we can get from psychology as well, learning psychology. Some more objectives, onto the next slide. The importance, responsibility of career planning and development, the HR's role, and some major factors contributing to successful career development and understanding the preparation desirable for a career in HR, and we might not talk too much about that last one. Just some facts just to get us going. The literacy among Australian students hasn't improved since the mid-80s. In fact, that's one of the problems that we've been getting in Australia, is that our literacy and numeracy has actually been going down. Some other countries like up in Scandinavia, Sweden, they've got very, very high standards, and there's a number of reasons, but that is something to be concerned about, and has an impact on us as employers as well, that literacy and numeracy has been going down instead of up. Now, this particular point here is probably less relevant about the unemployed, because as we're doing this recording right now, there are so many people right across all demographics that are losing their jobs because of the coronavirus. But this particular statistics from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, that's what ABS stands for, Australian Bureau of Statistics. Most unemployed are unskilled, have little work experience, and are older than 45. So that's an interesting fact in terms of considering the workplace. Why do you think workers older than 45 might be particularly at risk?
Most of the organisation they're looking for new employees are younger, because they have new ideas, innovation.
Mm. As you get older, whatever stage that is. Yes.
I think that's why they look for, that's why you do work experience.
Yeah, that's right. So if you're an older person and lose your job, you can be quite concerned, I'm sure. And also, if you don't have skills, it's very hard to get a job. So right now, there'd be a lot of people who are older and unskilled that are beginning to worry if they've lost their job, no doubt. Here's just a little bit of a discussion about strategic management. We might leave this slide and just continue on with, that was more of a revision slide, and move on with focusing on human resource development. So I'm going straight to the slide now on key terms. So what is human resource development? So we've got a definition here that human resource development, it includes training and development, career planning, and performance appraisal. The focus is on the acquisition of required attitudes and knowledge to facilitate the achievement of employee career goals and organisational strategic business objectives. So, in other words, it's all the activities that combine together to help us make sure that people have got the right knowledge, skills, abilities, all those things that we talked about from job analysis, to actually achieve the needs of the organisation, the strategic needs, and also satisfy the employee career goals. So let's just bring it down to us as individuals. Each of us in our own minds probably has a bit of a career plan, and we're working towards a bit of a career as individuals. So the responsibility at one level is on us as individuals to manage our own careers. From an organisation's perspective, they're trying to manage the careers of people, individuals within their organisation, to achieve their objectives. So you've got a career plan, I've got a career plan, and our organisation, let's say we're all now working in the organisation, they've got this strategic plan that they're trying to achieve. So the challenge is, how do we manage the careers of all the individuals and their particular career plans that they've got to match our needs of fulfilling our strategic plan? And so human resource development is basically trying to do that. It's trying to match employee career goals, our own career plans that we have as individuals, with that of the organisation's strategic plan. And so we've got to make sure that people have got the attitudes, the skills, the knowledge, the abilities, etc., to do both, to achieve their careers, their career plans, and to satisfy our needs of fulfilling our strategic plans as organisations. How can we do both? That's what human resource development is. How can we make sure that we're planning for people to have a career in our organisation as well as satisfying our strategic business objectives? When we talk about education, we're talking about roughly what we're doing now. Activities designed to improve the knowledge, skills and abilities of an individual. So it can be formal education, as in getting a degree, or we might have some other sorts of activities that help improve the knowledge, skills and abilities of the individuals, educating them up on how to change a tyre, for example. So just looking at the next slide, where it says training, education, employee development and knowledge management. And so training is focusing on skills and knowledge. Often our training, we're trying to give people the skills and knowledge. Education often is focusing on, okay, we're going to get a Bachelor of Business, we're going to get a graduate diploma, going to get a certificate, whatever it is. And so education is often talked about in terms of, well, what qualifications have you got? What education have you done? What qualifications have you got? So as an employer, we might think, okay, well, qualifications are useful. Let's send someone off to get their diploma of project management, because we want them to work more in project management. We know that if they can get a qualification in project management, then they'll probably still acquire the skills and knowledge that we need to help them manage our projects. But we might still need to put a bit of extra focus on additional training within our own organisation to adapt their qualification skills and knowledge to the skills and knowledge that we need specifically for our organisation. Okay, when we start using the word development, employee development, we're developing our employees for future roles. So we think that Taylor has got management potential, and so we're going to train her up. We're going to train Taylor up because in the future we can see that she's going to be a supervisor. So we're developing Taylor for future roles. And when we start talking in terms of knowledge management, gathering and organising and sharing knowledge, things that people need to know about things. So it could just be, these are the systems, these are the policies, This is our client base. This is how we use this particular customized software. You start gathering knowledge as individuals. And so how do we share that knowledge? And some organizations have developed what they call knowledge management systems in their organizations so that they don't lose important knowledge. They hang on to important knowledge. And a knowledge management system could actually be just a bunch of well-organized files and directories to keep that corporate knowledge within your organization so we don't forget the things that we need to know, whether it be a policy or procedure or records on things. It's all part of the knowledge that we need to have. So how do we manage all that knowledge that's important to our organisation? Now, there's different ways in which we all learn, and there's different ways in which we can assist people to learn. We can have lectures or seminars, a bit like what we're doing now, and workshops. We can run workshops in workplaces, similar to other sorts of training forums. We can give people case studies to have a look at of past events to sort of learn from. We can coach and mentor people. We can engage people with online learning activities, such as e-learning, where you might get them to, as I explained in an earlier lecture, go through modules and answer quiz questions. So it's self-directed online learning. That's a way that a lot of people go nowadays. On-the-job training, and so you learn by doing. So let's just, you know, get you into the department and, okay, I'm going to now change an oil filter on a car, and Taylor, would you like to just come and watch me do it? And then maybe the next car, I'll get you to take the oil filter off. So that's an example of on-the-job training. Simulations. Okay, we're now... learning how to be a bank teller. We're now learning how to be a bank teller. And let's have a simulated activity of having a transaction where a customer comes and withdraws cash from their account. Let's simulate this. So you're not actually doing it with a real customer, but you're simulating it. So let's practice this first. Initially, I'll be the customer and you'll be the bank teller, and then we can switch and you can be the customer and I'll be the bank teller, and vice versa. Self-directed learning, that's a bit what, like some of you are going to be doing at the moment, where you're listening to the lectures online and having to do the readings. So that's self-directed learning rather than coming in and just being taught things. You're having to guide yourself to make sure that you're learning the things that you are. And in the context of what you're doing at the moment, with as much support as I can give you. Action learning, that's learning by doing. So get in there and actually do something. The best way to learn is to do it. So we're going to start painting this wall, and I'll start giving you some tips of how to do it better once you started painting. So here's a paintbrush, here's the paint, let's start painting the wall. Okay, Matthew, I noticed that you're doing quite short strokes. Now let's start practicing doing long strokes. That's action learning, learning by doing. Behaviour modelling, and that's where you observe people, other people, doing things in a certain way, and you copy it. That's behaviour modelling, okay? Matthew has demonstrated some ways to behave around customers. I will learn from watching Matthew interact with other customers, because Matthew has modelled the way that he would like us to interact with these customers. So that's behaviour modelling. And another option, and this list of options of learning methodologies is not exhaustive, it's just some of the common ones, is you can send someone off to a conference. And that's quite a common thing in the work environment that I'm in, that lecturers and academics will sometimes go to a conference. For example, it might be the Australian Institute of Human Resource Management, and they'll have an annual conference, and there'll be a lot of different topics in human resource management that are talked about. And I'll go to that conference and I'll listen to the keynote speaker, who's quite experienced, and then there'll be a number of sessions dealing with specific areas of human resource management that we can go off and find out more information. We can network again with other people who work in human resource management. And so that's an example of people learning in another environment, that's through conferences. Any comments, questions? And so we need human resource development. It helps us to be constantly dealing with change, whether it's economic change and changes going on within our business, technology changes, organisational changes, social, legal and other changes. So basically, our world is full of change. And so we somehow need to adapt as organisations, and individuals. And we need to learn the new ways of doing things as a result of the push for all these changes. Okay, I'm just going to move through a couple of slides there. And I'm going to move on to the slide that's talking about job analysis again. Remember, job analysis is really, really important for just about all our human resource management functions. And so this particular slide on job analysis, I just want to highlight that it's by understanding the job and understanding the person that we can actually have a look at, well, what's the performance requirement and how are people performing? That's assessing the performance identification versus the performance measurement. And then we can compare those two, performance comparison, and then we can actually fill any gaps in performance with training and development. That's what this slide is basically highlighting. Have a look at what you require people to do from your understanding of the job. Have a look at what your person has got in terms of their knowledge, skills, abilities, competencies, experience, etc. What can they do? What do we want them to do? Can training be the answer? That's what this slide is telling us. Okay, I'm looking at the slide now that's talking about human resource development methods and techniques. First thing that I'd like us to consider are the human resource training programs that we're putting in place, What is the scope? So when we talk about the scope, it's basically talking about time, but it's also talking about what activities are we going to have within that training program. Are we going to deal with just safety, or are we going to deal with safety and talking about many other aspects of the job and talking about the organisational structure and the history? What is going to be the scope of our training program? What's it going to cover? Are we going to have training that's beyond the immediate job requirements? And that's thinking more about developing an employee, such as sending someone off to management training, even though they're not a manager at the moment. And then we need to think that we need to have a systematic approach. And a systematic approach, first of all, does a training needs assessment. What is our need for training? So we try and assess what are the training needs, and we can have a look at that earlier slide that we saw job analysis involved in that. So let's do some sort of assessment for the need of training. Then we conduct the training activity that we think will meet our needs for training and development. And then we evaluate it to see how effective was this. Did this actually lead to the person performing better on the job? So that's having a systematic approach. It's not just a matter of, oh, let's conduct some training. Okay, we've conducted the training, let's forget about it. You need to first plan, do we need the training? What is the need for training? Well, let's fill that gap with training, if training is the appropriate thing to fill that gap with. Let's conduct the activity, training activity, and then let's evaluate how effective it was. And there's different ways of doing that. So here's a slide that's showing that. Let's identify our training needs. Then we conduct the activity, and then we evaluate it. What was the reaction of those that learned? Was there actually learning that took place? Did it result in a change in behavior on the job, etc.? So in our evaluation, we can have a look at what are the organizational variables and the person variables. So we might have some specific planning objectives. We might want to change people's culture. We might want to see if there's an increase in sales. And so we can also have a look at the variables in the individual. We can give them tests. We can have a look at the observations from the supervisor, get feedback from customers, have a look at various records. And we can do some sort of assessment there. And as always, the job analysis information really helps us in terms of having a look at the job description and the person specification. So what types of activities are we actually going to get people to do? And so we can have classroom-based activities, such as what we're doing now. We can simulate activities. So we might do some how do you fly an aeroplane in a flight simulator. We can put management people through various scenarios as part of their management training, their process methods. We could do on-the-job experience. So someone's on the job and you can mentor and coach them. You can give them certain tasks to do under the as an understudy assignment, so under the guidance of say a supervisor, a management manager. Go off and have a go at this and I'll be here to assist. You can rotate people through various jobs. You can give them certain projects to do. You can second them. A secondment, do you know what a secondment is? A secondment is, okay, I'm going to, for a period of time, might be the next 4 months, I'm going to give you the chance of working in another department. And then you're going to come back to our department. And by being seconded to the other department or being on loan to the other department for a month, you're going to learn a whole heap of stuff about how that other department works.
Temporary transfer.
Yes, it's like a temporary transfer. And so you might second someone to work in the London office because you want them to learn how things work in another office. And so, okay, off you go to the London office for 3 months and then come back. And that's a secondment. It's like a temporary transfer. And so there's other sorts of things. We've talked a little bit about some of these things. I'm just going to touch base on some of them. You can get people to do competency-based training. Do you know what a competency-based training is? I'll tell you. Competency is when you can demonstrate that you are competent in something. You can do something. And so a competency-based training is often how a lot of the TAFEs will do things. Rather than exam-based, it's more demonstrate that you can actually do something. And so once you have demonstrated your competency in making a cup of coffee to this standard, I can sign you off as competent. Once you have demonstrated that you can operate this piece of machinery, making sure that you follow all the steps to the standard that you want, I can sign you off as being competent. Once you've demonstrated that you can communicate effectively in this sort of environment, I'll sign you off as competent in that area. And so in competency-based training, it's not a pass or fail. It's you are now competent or you're not yet competent. And so if you're not yet competent, then what can I do to assist you to become competent, to demonstrate your competency in this area? And some people might already have the competencies, and other people need to learn how to be competent. That's competency-based training. Does that make sense? Okay. Let's have a look at... looking at the slide that's got measure, indicators, how measured. And so you might want to measure someone's reactions as a result of the training or learning that's occurred. And so you can find out if they are satisfied or whether they enjoyed it. And you can do this through some sort of questionnaire or talking to people, or a focus group is where you get a bunch of people together to talk about it. So that's the different ways of how to measure someone's reactions, such as satisfaction and enjoyment. Sometimes you want to see, was there any physical learning that took place, such as did they get to know something? Can they demonstrate a particular skill? And so you could give them a test, you could measure it through a test, have a look at some work samples, observe their performance, get people to measure their ratings, you know, have the supervisor rate their performance. So that's a way of testing to see what knowledge and skills came as a result of their learning. Another one is to have a look for changes in their behaviour. So has there been any changes in attitudes, behaviour or motivation? And maybe that's part of what you were trying to do in the training and development activities, is you're trying to implement new cultural values or instill cultural values. So are there any changes in attitudes, behaviour, motivation? And again, you could measure that through observing, through performance ratings, through feedback from customers, etc. Has there been any change in attitude? Maybe you're looking at a change in results, such as sales, or a reduction in turnover or absenteeism or accidents. And so you can start looking at your production statistics and results to see if your training and development in the area of safety, for example, has made any difference. Another thing you might be trying to measure is return on investment, because training usually involves some sort of investment, whether it's the time of those involved in the training process or the time of the people that are coming along to participate, or other sorts of investments, such as if you've outsourced it to an external training provider. You can do some sort of cost-benefit analysis. So it's cost us $100,000. Have we got $100,000 worth of benefit from that $100,000 that we've invested in training? That's the sort of analysis that we can work out. Any comments, questions at this stage? This is just showing some different ways of sophistication of how we might deliver it. So at the bottom, you might just have one group and just do one post-test. So you deliver the training and then give them one test. That's quite a low sophisticated, you know, fairly easy method. Whereas you might have two groups. One might be a trained group and one might be an untrained group, and you might do a pre and a post test between both groups. You measure before and after the training for differences on the pre and post test measures, and compute any gain scores, etc. So you're measuring them before the training, measuring them after the training, doing the same for both groups. That's more sophisticated. So then you move up in different levels from one group to two groups, and whether you're doing a pre and post test or not. So if you've got one group, we've already talked about just giving them a test after the training. So we've given them a training. What's their level of performance or knowledge or skill at the end of the training? That's the simple one. We could have one group where we test before they come on the training and then test them at the end to see if there's been any increase in knowledge and skills. So you can see that just by adding a test before the training and in addition to the test after, you've got something that you can compare. Has there been any improvement in results? And you're basically doing the same for two groups as you do there, just by adding the pre-test to the post-test. So they're just different ways in which you can do your measurement to give yourself some idea. It's really a judgment up to you and your own organisations to decide what level of sophistication. Do I actually want to give them a test before their training or not? In reality, most people just do the post-tests. Have you ever been in a situation, Taylor, where you have been required to do a test before the training and then a test again after the training? Yeah, that's right. So Taylor's just saying that her experience is it's been mainly post-test as well. Okay, so there's a slide on orientation. I'll direct you to the separate recording on induction. So I'm now looking at the slide on core concepts in learning. And so we need to ask ourselves, well, what's the relevance of what we're doing? And so last week when we were talking about selection, we talked about validity doesn't measure what it's supposed to measure. And I suppose what we're talking about here in terms of relevance is the training related to what we want them to actually learn? Is how relevant is it to the job? Another concept is reinforcement. And so there's a lot of study out there saying that if you just give them the information once, then they'll probably forget it. And so by reinforcing it, by the person going over the same thing multiple times, the change in behaviour or the acquiring of knowledge or skill will be reinforced. So it's an important concept in learning is the concept of reinforcing. If I show you how to make a cup of coffee, you can probably demonstrate to me straight away how to make that cup of coffee. But if you don't then make that cup of coffee in that same way, in the next little while, several times, you'll probably forget what I taught you. So it's important for that to be reinforced. Similarly, in the materials that we're covering in this and any of your units that you're studying, that's why it's important to go through the materials again by reading the chapter and going through your lecture notes and constantly looking for ways to reinforce the material so that it sticks, that you retain that knowledge. Another important concept is the transfer of training. And by this, what we're saying is you need to transfer from what you've learnt in the classroom, for example, to on the job. So if you go to a training course and you learn about all these fantastic new ways of doing things, but then you don't transfer that knowledge that you've just learnt to the job, then it's wasted. So that's an important concept of the ability to be able to transfer what you've learnt in the training environment to the actual job. Can we actually do that transfer of learning? Knowledge of results is an important one. Do people actually know how well they've performed in their training? Distribution of learning. Okay, are we giving them everything they need to know in one hit, or are we spacing it out? Yeah. Yes, are we spacing out or distributing the learning over a period of time? And there's, a strong argument for distributing the learning rather than giving it to them all in one hit, because if we give it to them all in one hit, it's information overload. And that's related to whole versus part learning. So for example, each lecture you're learning a little bit more about, say, the functions of human resource management or different aspects of human resource management. So today we're just dealing with part of the learning of what we need to know about human resource management. And it might be that you're going to just work on a production line in one aspect of production. So you don't need to know everything there is about making that engine, but you probably do need to learn about one particular part of engine assembly so that you're able to contribute. Another concept is practice and learning, to make sure that people practice what they've learned. It's a bit much related to reinforcement and transfer of training. We need to practice what we've learned. And the other concept is activity versus passivity. So listening to a lecture is quite passive. Actually doing something like getting out there and doing an activity on interviewing is more active rather than just learning the theory. The other thing to be mindful of, and we take this from the psychologists, what they found, is that we all have our own natural and preferred learning styles. So some people prefer to come along to a class, for example, and to interact with the lecturer and talk about things. And other people prefer to read the information and absorb it themselves. Some people don't like theory. They much prefer learning by doing. Yes, and a comment just coming from the floor here that a lot of people don't like theory, yes. So that's just acknowledging that we all have our different learning styles, and culturally we're used to learning in different ways as well. And that's maybe something that you found coming to Australia for some of you, is that the way learning is done in colleges and universities here is quite different to how learning is done in universities and colleges in their home country. So that's where we all have different ways of learning, and we need to be mindful that our employees, our staff, will naturally probably have their own preferred learning styles, and are we able to accommodate that in the way we help them to learn the things that we need them to learn. So I'm looking at the learner-centred learning slide. The first point is the need to know point, and that is, if people don't understand the relevance, why they need to learn this, then they probably won't be motivated to try and learn it. So if you can actually show them the importance of what we're actually doing, then they're more inclined to be motivated to learn it. So we need to tell them and help them to understand why we're doing this particular training. Also, another concept in learner-centred learning is people need to identify with the need to be self-directing. So people need to own their own learning. They can't just say, well, my learning is responsible on the lecturer. They need to take that up themselves. I had a student just in this last round of assessments that said, oh, I didn't know where to find the assessment, so that's why I didn't do the assessment. Well, that person obviously hasn't taken on self-directed learning themselves of reading the unit outline, listening to what the lecturer has to say in lectures, even coming along to class, dare I say. Students need to be self-directing, and that's the same for all employees in the workplace as well. They need to be self-directing as well, in terms of, I need to be committed to learning and taking on board learning for myself as well. and do my part in learning and developing my career. Let's just talk about the greater volume and quality of experience. The more volume there is that could have an impact on the quality. So we need to then ask ourselves, do we just do things in smaller chunks and try and have a higher quality learning outcome rather than give them all the material in one bit? It's related to the scope of the learning as well, and learning in chunks. So the more volume, there could be a reduction in the quality of the experience, the more we're trying to get them to learn in a short period of space. So just be mindful of that. Also, someone's readiness to learn, or motivation to learn, or capacity to learn. People are at different stages in that as well, and so we need to be considerate of that. And it might be that Taylor's all ready to take on board this new bit of learning, but Samuel's not. And yeah, their orientation to learning. And so we all learn through life, we learn through tasks, we learn through problems, and they all impact on our learning as well. Just got a slide here that goes to show how initially, through learning over time, our production can actually be quite steep. We through giving them some training, automatically their production goes up. However, there's a period of where it plateaus, flattens off for a bit, and then increases again. And so we just need to be mindful of, don't be too disheartened as an individual or as a supervisor when our employees hit that plateau. They're not going to be able to maintain that steep increase in production as a result of the training forever. They're going to come back and they're going to be able to be more productive, hopefully. Then that'll plateau, and then hopefully with ongoing support, then there'll also be another increase in their productivity. Now, in terms of career development, starting to talk more about careers and how we manage and develop individuals and manage that as an organisation, there's a concept of boundaryless careers, and not everyone wants to move upwards all the time in their career. Let's just talk about that. Most people, in terms of a career plan, will sort of think upwards. They'll think, okay, I want to start off at this level, I want to build myself up into more senior roles with responsibility over time. At the end of this slide, we might take a break and we'll do part B of this lecture after the break. So someone with a boundaryless career, they might not have necessarily started off with a view of a boundaryless career, but they might have then changed their career aspirations. And so a boundaryless career involves switching jobs, switching your specialisation, switching what you do. You might switch companies, industries, location. In fact, your career can be all over the place, and that's okay, because you're the sort of person that is happy to switch between what you do, what level you're working at, where you work, etc. And so a boundaryless career involves maybe promotions, or maybe taking on jobs with less responsibility. It doesn't really matter, because your career is not focused on always advancing upwards. You don't mind if you're someone who's having a boundaryless career. You if you get a promotion, great. If you're doing a job with less responsibility, that's okay as well. Or if you're just doing a sideways move, that's okay. So most of us, when we think of careers, we're thinking of always building up and going upwards and doing something with more responsibility. I'm going to go from the person working on production to working as the production supervisor to, you know, one day I want to be the general manager. That might be what someone's career is. Whereas another person, they're quite happy to to never be in a senior management role, and they might even be happy to do different things. Okay, so that is the end of part A of recordings on training and development and career development. We're going to take a break here in the classroom. When we come back, we're going to have part B of the recording on training and development.